just for a minute or two on the rural accuracy phase, not just adding the things. At the BPD system, what accuracy would mean?
Right now, if you think about the various pieces of information we can return on a trait, from our genetic evaluations, we return the EPD and some measure of accuracy. From the DNA tests, we return a score, but we don't yet have any accuracy figures, at least associated with them that I'm aware of. Is anybody publishing accuracy figures with them? Okay. There's some work that needs to go into expressing accuracy. Now, let's pick on identity for again. Let's assume they add a test score and keep the scale the same, or they add a test score and expand it. In either case, the minute somebody adds a marker to that, their test should be more accurate. And yet we're not going to go back and test all the historical animals, so we're going to end up in a period of time where animals are measured, even within the same company, for different panels. And accuracy is going to need to be important in that case. If we go to the system where we merge this information into the genetic evaluation systems, and the information we merge in from these panels and the ones that these companies are continuing to develop provide us, as they should and will, a really good increase in accuracy. What Dave is getting at as a seed stock producer, instead of selling the commercial industry a bull that no matter how good its pedigree is, has an accuracy of 20%, maybe we can start selling yearling bulls with accuracies of 50, 60, 70%. And that's going to be the true advantage of this particular technology in terms of transferring genetics from one segment of the industry to the other. The promise is there. The opportunity is here for us to make this kind of a move. And I recommend very strongly we start to consider this series. Other questions?
John, have you approached the companies at this time and asked for proposed a recommendation for standardizing reporting systems?
We held a meeting Wednesday night? Wednesday night, in which we had the DNA companies, breed associations, and we started talking about this kind of a system. Mike Tess is in charge of a commission that's studying the transfer of this technology, at least information-wise. And we started talking about moving in this direction. It's going to require that these companies genotype the same population so we can assess the values of these tests, come up with not the values of them relative to each other, but the value of them relative to the EPDs that we're going to put them into. And I'm going to say, and I hope I'm right, that that was a very encouraging meeting, both of the context that the DNA companies, I think, believe this is a step forward, and we'll ask them. And the breed associations, I think, believe if we start making those steps forward, then capturing information becomes more and more important, and building that infrastructure for getting that information to the genetic evaluation system becomes even more important. Vic? Sue? Jim? Any problems with moving in that direction?
We were ready a year ago on that.
So? Jim?
Okay. Can I make one comment? I don't think we should ever worry about improving the accuracy of it so it makes the other ones less accurate. Because, John, we've been doing that since the first sire summary came out. We understand that the sire summary quantitative genetics got better. We did not do it because we were worried about changing grandma.
Yeah, but it's not, it's a little subtle difference, but I agree with you 100%. That's not a deterrent to progress.
Right.
I never say don't add another SNP. But this technology has got subtle differences along the way. You do the parents under one panel, and the progeny are in a new generation of SNPs added to that test. And the likelihood is we're not going to go back and redo the parents. But if we have a system that recognizes that evolution of those panels, then we don't have to go back. We don't need to do that. whereas now there could be some confusion relative to what panel they were on. And we don't have a huge number of traits and SNPs in place right now, but they're coming fast. And this is going to be an issue we need to address as we go through. So
I want you to take care of that, because then you have to publish what the actual students have. So as you add more markers, the accuracy will go up, you know, automatically. So that would be a fixed amount.
But, yeah, that's a great point. What Sue is saying is if we get it into the EPDs, I think this is what you're saying, as you get it into the EPDs, the way we will compute those accuracies will reflect the values of the test. Because when you get down to there, the only reason then you will need to know any of the basic information from the genetic part is if you want to do mating strategies and things like that. For selection, which we're focusing on, once we get them in there, the accuracies will reflect both the value of the pedigree, the value of the phenotypes, and the quality of the test applied, whether it be an evolving panel within or the panels between. Other questions?
Dr. John, it seems to me while you may have three companies today that are, playing at this point in time, that this will continue to evolve. Well, if not, if you're
the number of companies?
Sure.
Oh, we hope so.
And so while you might get standardization from maybe perhaps three companies for a few trades, wouldn't you anticipate other players and they're going to market how they see is going to be to their competitive advantage?
I think they will market as they see to their competitive advantage as long as you, the producer consumers, buy what they sell and not buy into this. If you insist on validation, if you insist that this information be melted down to something that's understandable as the consumer of these tests, then if these three agree to do that, somebody else coming in anew is either going to have to work against the entire system and the educational program on their own as well. And that's their decision. Would you stand alone?
I would do whatever I thought was of the best competitive advantage of my company.
And we want to make it such that this is where they should be. We'll see. Of that, I'm sure. Another question.
John, the three approaches, which of the three do you prefer?
On the previous slide?
Three, with respect to three different companies, are reporting three different ways now?
For the purpose of selection, we've educated producers almost the entire time BIF has existed that you select from the additive genetic merit, and that the number that represents that genetic merit be in units of the trait, so that I can look at the difference in EPDs and say, this is the difference in the expected progeny performance, and I can assess the value of that and then compare it to the differential price in this case of the tests. I prefer a reporting system for selection that reports the additive genetic merit in the units of the trait. Okay? So you ask each of the companies if they meet that qualification.
John, as I stated under one of your previous slides, you talked about so the reason we want DNA markers so we can select cattle at an earlier age for important traits, but it doesn't seem like anyone's spending a lot of time on the traits like calving ease and mature size and weaning weight and growth and those traits that we do have a lot of data about.
And that's one of the reasons we have a lot of data. We have EPDs. We do get we have a system in place for those kinds of traits. And as this technology came into the arena for marketing, the original discoverers, the original gene chasers, whatever we want to call them, historically, focused on those traits where we're going to have problems. And remember, if you think about it historically, 5 or 6 years ago, we were getting inundated with the importance of tendons. This to me is one of the biggest disconnects in what's happened here. We just pounded tenderness as being one of the most important traits in the array of traits we need to look at in beef cattle. And we've got tools now to use it, and yet nobody can seem to figure out the economic model to say I ought to be tested for those. And so Dave says we all got to be good neighbors, because it's to the best industry of the beef, best interest of the beef industry to improve our tenderness because the consumer's tenderness. So that's where the original focus was. Getting EPDs or getting markers for these other traits is going to have value. It will give us earlier indications of those animals. It will allow us ultimately to dissect these negative correlations or antagonistic correlations and maybe be able to break that apart in our selection program. It has value, but really, we're not chasing those very much. Are you guys thinking about the weight traits? So it's going to come. I thought you were going to mention things like cattle health, reproduction, stayability. We don't have much in those either, data-wise, and yet those are very important traits. And some of the barriers are phenotypic data collection.
This question over here.
Glenn?
I actually was going to make a comment and a statement in a comment. One of the things that you said earlier that I think this audience would be pretty sensitive to is that if you express a genotypic value, a genotype on a bull, in terms of an EPD, that's a function of two things. It's a function of the value of the gene and the frequency of that gene within the population that bull is going to be used. So if you happen to have a bull that's homozygous for a desirable tenderness allele, and you're going to use that in a population where the frequency of that tenderness allele is 95%, it's not worth very much. The contribution of that genotype in that bull to kids' EPD is very, very small. If, on the other hand, you're using exactly the same bull in another population with a little frequency, you use 20% of the desirable bull, that has a big economic impact, or potentially has a big economic impact. I think that's one of the strongest justifications for us expressing genotypic values in terms of EPDs, because it makes it relevant to the populations in which we're working. It may make it a little complicated if we're crossbreeding or moving around using bulls between different populations, but that's an issue. We are, on the other hand, studying traits more than just tenderness and marbling and feed efficiency. I'll talk tomorrow about a SNP chip that we just got into development at Illumina. That's going to be a really valuable tool, I think, for improvement. I'll be talking about that tomorrow. And we're going to be genotyping a heck of a lot of cattle, probably 10,000 head of cattle. And they're going to come from all kinds of different populations, and we have all kinds of different phenotypes, and EPDs, including the ones we're doing too. And I think there's going to be a lot of information on that. So that work is going.
I'm curious for that testing. But in the seed stock business, you would have a genotype on the van.
You might.
Within the seed stock business, you would.
Yeah, I actually think this technology is going to, interestingly enough, for various reasons, is going to have some very interesting applications on the female side. And it's just because there are more females running around in the seed stock sector than there are bulls. So when it comes to actually identifying really desirable combinations of genes, you're much more likely to find it in the females than you are in the males. There's that many more of them. You've got much more opportunity to identify. It's going to cost you more to do the gene cycling analysis, but you'll justify the cost of what you're testing for.
Don, would you advise seed stock producers who are using ultrasound data, you know, EPDs and so on, to not waste their money to run a profile such as the Genevieve has, so they can determine the differences in marbling or ribeye area or tenderness and so on? Would that be a waste of money to do that?
I'm not going to answer the question in the way you asked it. I answer the question in the way I've rehearsed it. I live in an ideal world. Genetic programs are economic enterprises, right, Dave? You have a cost to achieve a certain amount of information, and when you apply that information to a process, you're going to generate a return. So the question is, if I am doing ultrasound, should I add the markers on? It's a matter of stepping back and saying, I have options here. I can do carcass data, and we saw quite a few people that selected that option. I can do ultrasound, I can do DNA markers, I can do any combination of the two, or I can do all three. And each one of those has a cost. And each one of them will generate some kind of information on which to do selection. And then you look at that information and say, how much better can I do with any one of these combinations or any one of them individually? And you just decide which one generates the largest return on investment. And so to answer your question, I would say if you're investing already in ultrasound and you're just not going to give that up, then your answer to the question is, okay, how much more do I pay for the test? And if I'm increasing my accuracy with that, how much faster can I make progress in order to generate return? Okay, to me, he's got to always look at these things as economic enterprises, as possible. I'm doing a great job at being
John, you do the cemetery evaluations. They do have a shear force within the DPD. So I guess my question is, I'm sure you've looked at these markers. What kind of impact do you see these markers that are currently available having on shear force DPD?
That answer to that question depends on which animals you're actually looking at. For any trait, whether it be shear force or weight or anything else, when you get an animal that's got a high accuracy from a lot of progeny, and you then include the marker information on top of that, you're not going to see much of a change in those animals' rankings. And Dick Quast showed that with the tenderness. So we don't generate these tests to apply them to animals historically that have a lot of data. And when you look down the road, then you say, well, where do they have that value? It's, as I mentioned earlier, it's where we haven't generated the huge amounts of information on that animal to be able to be accurate for each individual in terms of their evaluation. And the critical animals are the yearling ones. They're critical for a couple reasons. One is they are going to be low accuracy. And two, they're the ones that are going into the other segment producing the thing closest to the product that we want to produce. So that accuracy would be greatly enhanced if the tests expand to explain a good portion of the variation. But the bulls with progeny, now I used to laugh when people said he's the best Angus bull in the breed, but he's got no stars. And I go, that's the first animal I would use, because it's a whole lot easier to find two stars in a female than it is to find that polygenic effect that high that he got there without the stars. Right? Other questions?
How close are you to being able to incorporate all these in the DPDs?
It's a two-step process. We are committed to do the multi-trait evaluation, develop those systems, and then those systems themselves are the ones we're hoping to use for this incorporation, because those systems are built to allow us to bring in external information. In this case, right now, we're bringing in external bull information based on their breeding values or their DPDs and accuracies from other breed associations that aren't in the multi-breed. In this case, we would bring in the molecular information, or we add it as a multiple trait. Neither of those will, the first one, really would be easy for us to do.
John, can you handle 40,000 markers?
It depends on how we get them. If we get them as individual SNPs, the answer is no. If we get them at that numeric score into the evaluation, the answer is yes. We had to make a decision a while ago as to whether to integrate SNPs into our genetic evaluation or not. We'd have invested a lot of money under this thought that we were going to get based on some of the stuff Jerry would tell me, that there's 3 to 5 genes. Remember back when? 3 to 5 genes that are going to account for most of the variation. And you think, well, I can fit a system that does that. Now we're starting to see there's a little bit more that are going to be involved in 13 to
15.
60. Okay. If we just started off building these systems that brought in a snippet of time, we would have built an archaic system. We made the correct decision back then, I think, and we didn't know enough about where this technology was going to build a system that would be sustainable into the future. I think now the system we're looking at building is going to be sustainable, because we're not going to bring in the individual markers, we're going to bring in the assessment of the technology. And that's a whole different game. We're going to the merits, and we're going to try and capture it. Other questions? Okay, thank you.